Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A school bus runs over a girl's leg. A man is shot in the face, and a local nurse videotapes people in the bathroom.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, hey he, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, September 10, 2010. A 13-year-old girl suffered a compound fracture when a school bus crushed her leg outside a Beaverton school. The crash occurred near the Arts and Communication Magnet Academy on Southwest Center Street at about 2:30 p.m. Thursday.
The Magnet Academy? How does that work?
Only the most attractive children can go there.
Never mind. I was doing a thing. Don't worry.
We had completely different jokes going on there.
Getting my meme on.
Oh, you were doing a Juggalo thing.
No, don't worry about it. It's too late now.
What's up with that Magnet Academy?
Don't try to make it funny in retrospect. I've failed.
The crash occurred near the school at 2:30 p.m. Thursday. A Beaverton police spokesman, or spokeswoman as the case may be, said the seventh grader was riding her bike the wrong way in the school's parking lot and crashed into the bus. The bus driver was in the proper lane, officer said, and did not see the girl.
That's got to be a uniquely terrifying moment when you're a school bus driver and you look down and there's a kid in your grill.
You hear the thump. What was that?
You hear any sort of banging sound or any sort of dull thud on the outside, and you think to yourself, well, that was a nice career I had. Wonder what prison will be like.
My husband, who always comments on everyone's driving everywhere because he's the policeman of the world, we were driving somewhere not long ago, and there was a school bus. And he was annoyed because the school bus driver was, like, slowing down or driving safely or stopping at a railroad crossing or something. And I said, well, you know, he's a school bus driver. That's actually his job. And my husband said, that's not his job. His job is to get the kids to school and not rape them.
Well, I mean, in a strictly technical sense, I suppose he is right. I mean, you could make the argument that that does fall within his purview.
Apparently, in my husband's mind, though, that is the job of the school bus driver. Get the kids to school and don't rape them.
It does really raise the question of what sort of school your husband went to and what exactly the nature of the punishment was that might have been administered to children who displeased the bus driver.
That's not part of his job at all.
All right. Yeah. You don't know whether you're a kid, though. You just, you know, if they just tell you that that's the punishment for putting gum underneath the seat, who are you to quibble?
Okay. All right. You were late getting back from the field trip to the zoo and made everyone wait, and then you have to stay behind with the bus driver later.
That'll be a night in the box and a raping. I had some observation that I was going to make like 5 minutes ago about the bus guy, but now it's completely escaped me. Wait. No, I've got nothing. All right. You are listening to Legion of News right here at pdx.fm. Don't forget it's available on your mobile device as well. That's mobile.pdx.fm. You can also get it via iTunes later on in the day or in the archives at legionofnews.com or at pdx.fm. This is Dawn Taylor.
Thursday morning, a Vancouver Police Department spokeswoman said police were called to a home in the 3500 block of McLaughlin Boulevard in Vancouver at the report of a disturbance. The resident of the home had confronted an intruder, someone he knew. The men got into an argument, police said, and the resident shot the other man in the face. When officers arrived, they found the 22-year-old shooting victim sitting on the curb and talking to bystanders. He was taken to the hospital and in serious condition. A neighbor who lives nearby said he heard gunfire. This neighbor across the street said this gentleman broke into his house, stole some things from him, and said he shot him, said the neighbor. Police said no arrests have been made.
The language is a little vague there. This guy across the street said somebody who knew broke into the house, stole some things, and shot him. Who shot who?
There was a man in Vancouver. Police were called because they heard there was a disturbance, and they showed up, and apparently the resident of the home had confronted an intruder.
Yes.
Who apparently, according to the neighbors, stole some things from him. And the man who lived in the home shot the guy in the face.
Okay, so the intruder was shot in the face.
Right.
But then he was just sitting on the curb, sort of talking to passersby.
Yeah. He shot me in the face. That's not right.
What does it say about Vancouver if you're walking down the street and you see a guy with a huge bloody hole in the center of his face, but he's just one more guy from the neighborhood?
Have you been to Vancouver? There's an awful lot of Vancouver that would not be unusual at all.
I just think of Vancouver as just being a lot of concrete, and occasionally a McDonald's somewhere. Just sort of, but that's only for landmarking purposes, really.
The thing is, Vancouver is huge, and it's really spread out and sprawled out, and there's very little actual city planning. So you have, like, really rich people who live along the river. And there are some very nice neighborhoods in Vancouver where relatively wealthy people live. And then there's just the hell holes. There are neighborhoods that are just sheer, unadulterated hell holes.
They've just been left to seed.
Yeah.
I mentioned a while back that I went to a poker game a while back with maybe a few years ago. But we were talking last month about poker, and I said that I went to the house of a guy who owned a large car dealership in this area, and that it was in some secret private part of Vancouver that I felt like the rest of us were never allowed to see. That it was under some sort of Romulan cloaking dome or something, and it's just like unless you knew the password, you wouldn't even be able to aware that part of Vancouver existed. And it was on the river, but again, it was like part of the river that I'd never seen either.
Yeah.
So I get the feeling that there's just some huge, like, Gondorian statues that either end or something that prevent commoners from looking at it unless we've been invited.
Yeah, if you ever take one of those boat trips, like out the Columbia, like out to the gorge or something, to go out to the dam and to Hood River and stuff, you will go down the river past parts of Vancouver that you had no idea existed, that you can only see from the river, that you go, holy crap, there are some, like, insanely rich people who live in Vancouver. Who knew? Well, yes, they live in these secret neighborhoods that no one is allowed to know about.
The other thing on the story before we move on is I wonder what kind of gun the guy used or how he shot the guy in the face, but your face is a relatively small area, even if you're that John Merrick guy. It's only so big. So there's a limited number of...
If you're standing fairly close to someone.
No, but I guess what I'm saying is, he didn't say shot him in the head. He said shot him in the face, which means that the surface area is even smaller than shooting the guy in the head.
Mm-hmm.
With what kind of gun can you shoot a guy in the face and it does so little damage that he can just sit out on the curb, staring at passing traffic and having conversations with the man on the street?
Probably a 22.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're up close, though, that's a...
But if you shoot the guy, like, in the cheek or something, and it just goes, like, through the meat of his cheek and doesn't go into any bone or anything.
The meat of his cheek. I was just wondering if maybe the guy just had... If his brain was, in fact, just so underpowered that he was effectively just a one-celled organism, and you could just remove most of him and he would just still be able to sit there and shoot the breeze about the Mariners or something.
And sometimes, the head is a surprisingly resilient thing when you consider that it's just, bone holding a gelatinous thing that operates everything inside of it. You hear all the time about people, like, even trying to commit suicide and shooting themselves in the head, and it just kind of goes through their skull and ricochets off, and they're like, ow. Or someone who's driving down the freeway.
That may not represent the actual noise that someone makes when they shoot themselves in the head, by the way.
There have been people who have, like, just been driving down the freeway and have taken a stray bullet in the head and didn't realize it, and then later gone, wow, something hurts, and then finding out that they have a bullet in their
head. Honey, are there skeeters in the car?
Yeah.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Clark County nurse was fired and could lose his license after he was accused of secretly taping patients and staff members in the bathroom. According to an article in the Columbian newspaper, Washington state health officials suspended Matthew Long's license Thursday pending a complete investigation. Kaiser Permanente's Salmon Creek Medical Office fired him back in June after an employee found his cell phone taped under a sink and recording video in a bathroom. Long was facing voyeurism charges.
Okay.
President Barack Obama said today that one of the reasons for possible increased anti-Muslim sentiment in the United States is that during tough times, fears can surface. Mr. Obama said one of the things he most admired about President George W. Bush after the September 11th attacks was Bush's decision to make clear that the U.S. was not at war with Islam.
But the American people didn't send us here to think about our jobs. They sent us here to think about theirs. And there are small businesses right now who are putting off plans to hire more workers.
Am I playing the right cut? Is this Obama 1 I'm supposed to be playing?
That's not the kind of leadership.
No, you're supposed to be playing Nation 1.
Oh, no, I'm playing entirely the wrong thing.
Yeah,
it's my fault. All right, it's a Nation 1 here.
I will do everything that I can, as long as I'm president of the United States, to remind the American people that we are one nation under God. And we may call that God different names, but we remain one nation.
The phrase, as long as I'm president, has a certain fatalistic ring to it.
As long as I got the job.
It sounds like somebody may already be putting things into boxes somewhere. I had a best idea for a product, by the way. I think it was like last year, I had this grand scheme for like a day and a half where I was going to sell this bumper sticker that said, I heart my carbon footprint. Because I figured the brilliant thing about that is people are dumb, and so it'll sell to everybody. Because everybody will look at that and see what they want to see. You know, some brainless hippie will look at it and go, "Well, I'm respecting Gaia or whatever the
I'm
hell."
I'm making
a
statement. It's ironic.
Because people who are like driving some tight ass in a Prius or something. You know, who's like, "I'm saving the planet."
Oh yeah, I'm happy about my a smug kind of thing.
No,
I'm happy about my carbon footprint.
Yeah, because here's the thing: is that like, you know, it's like conservatives are a-holes, but liberals are smug.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Liberals are just smug bastards, and so they would absolutely get that, so they could be sort of self-righteous in their idiotic smugness. But then conservative dicks would get it, so they could just continue to be like obnoxious jackasses. And they'd be, "I love my carbon footprint. Look at how huge my car is. Sometimes I just let it idle for hours in the driveway going nowhere." And everybody would buy the bumper sticker, seeing their own thoughts or prejudices reflected in it. It's a Rorschach sticker almost. Mm-hmm. See, that's 2009. Here's the new school.
Okay.
I want to make a bumper sticker that just says this. It says, "I heart my Muslim president." See?
I love that.
I'm telling you right now.
I love that.
Can I tell you, you get this genius for free every day. You sit across the table from it.
I know.
I'm just feet away from you. You could touch
That's
me.
Awesome.
You can't, and I don't want you to, but you could. Like before,
I tried once.
If I was not able to get away fast
slapped
enough.
Slapped me.
But I totally put that on my car. Because here's the thing, is you could see, no matter who you know, no matter what their political persuasion is, you could see them buying that to make whatever moronic statement they felt they wanted to make. You know what would be great, by the way, is if it turned out that he really was a Muslim or was, like, not born here.
I keep telling you, I think the best thing would be if we find out that he's actually some kind of, like, a space alien.
Yeah.
He's like a lizard man, and he just unzips, you know, his suit and takes it off at, like, his very last press conference. And then we realize that for the past 4 years, you know, we've been led by a lizard man.
He was really a multi-tentacled Lovecraftian demon.
Yeah.
"I'm sorry, I really am the demon Thoth. I didn't, I didn't want to tell you about it because I thought it might be awkward." It's like, have no illusions about this. I'm not saying he's not born here, and I don't really care one way or the other. I just like to see the apple cart upset every now and again. I like the idea, sort of figuratively speaking, that everybody that's on one side of the ballroom, they all have to switch Red Rover style and run to the other side of the ballroom real quickly. You know, so if everybody sort of dug their heels in, that, well, of course he's born. Of course he's not a Muslim. If it came out tomorrow that he was, just to sort of see how long it would take everybody to get their political equilibrium back, you know?
Well, I was listening to one of his many recent speeches in the car coming in here this morning, which I'm not sure, which I wasn't, I didn't, I missed the beginning of it, and I was half asleep, so I wasn't sure if this was a State of the Union thing, if it was the economy thing, if it was the I don't know what it was. It just went on forever and ever and ever while I was driving. And my question is this: is it just me, or is he getting even, like, thicker and more shameless with the folks he speak?
Well, probably. Because he's probably got people telling him he's going to be a one-term president unless he connects with, quote, the average American.
Because he was talking about, like, something having to do with the economy or something, and he just keeps saying these things. Because, you know, we're gonna have folks
right.
that, and I'm like, gonna have folks.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't remember you speaking like that when we were voting for you.
Well, it is. Now, look, just to be devil's advocate here, it is entirely possible, maybe not probable, but it is possible that the way he spoke during the campaign cycle was, in fact, not his natural style of speaking. Like, I don't know what the dialect from Chicago sounds like. I mean, I kind of know from, like, I know from Bugsy Malone movies or whatever, but, so maybe the dropping the G's thing or something. Like, I've never been to Chicago, so I don't know. But maybe that is, in fact, the actual way he speaks. But when he's in a more formal setting, he makes a note. Because it's like I talk like a rube half the time, but if you put me in a room where I have to be respectable, I can act like I'm respectable.
It just feels to me like whenever he is wanting to talk to America at large about something, about the economy, about healthcare, about, you know, not burning books in giant piles or firebombing people in turbans, you know, he just starts with the folksy talk so that we all know that he's just a regular guy, and we can he's not one of them intellectuals talking down to us.
It's
now.
Funny though that you think that like the whole thing of dropping his G's and using the word folks a lot. That is the polar twin to, quote, talking about firebombing people in turbans. One is sort of one will cancel the other out.
It just feels very much like he has.
I'm not saying we need to firebomb them like over and over again, but maybe just once or twice till they get the idea.
It feels like he has advisors that have explained to him that one reason why Clinton and Bush and W were so likable is because, you know, they just talk to the people like he was one of them.
Yeah.
So come down off your high horse there, Mr. Obama, and say gonna and folks. And that'll put people at ease, and then your poll numbers will be better.
Well, the thing
something.
Is, though, you act like that's not true, and that clearly is true.
Well,
I mean,
and as I've said before, though, I want the leader of the free world to be someone who's smarter than the guy who works at Plaid
yeah,
Pantry.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That doesn't matter. I mean, if only... The thing is... As I think we've noted on this show before, like, think of how dumb the average person is, and then realize half the country's dumber than they are.
I know. You'd think, though, even dumb people would be smart enough to realize that somebody smarter than them should be running things.
No. In fact, here's why that isn't the case, Dawn. Because, and now I'm pulling a Dawn here, but you'll have to trust me on this. There was in fact, an article that came out in, where the hell did I read this?
Liar!
Yeah, see?
You're just making things up
But
now.
They did this study. It was the Yahoo News had this study a while back that we may have, in fact, covered on the show. I don't know. But where they talked about people who, they put people in a laboratory setting and sort of gave them a variety of tests and spatial relations and language tests and, you know, linguistics and mathematics or whatever. And they found out that the dumber you were, the more likely you were to believe yourself to be intelligent and to be, like, intractable in that belief. So if you were really, really dense, you would absolutely be convinced that you were a genius and that you would, like, refuse to acknowledge that was never the case. So, you know, I'm just saying, it's all well and good that you want somebody smart, but in an electoral sense, you know, you don't really matter. No offense. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, at 1 o'clock, the Rick Emerson radio program will be coming up, and we'll have an interview today with Mr. Kenny Johnson, late of The Shield. He played Curtis Lem Lemansky on The Shield, and he just joined the cast of Sons of Anarchy, which started Season 3 this week, playing a biker, which is weird because he's actually wearing, if you watch Sons of Anarchy, he said that he is a member of the Tacoma chapter or charter or whatever of the Sons of Anarchy Motorcycle Club, but then he's actually wearing the vest that says Oregon on the back, which is sort of righteous. So anyway,
I got to talk to them.
It was really, it was quite something. So we have an interview with Kenny Johnson of The Shield and Sons of Anarchy coming up today. We will also talk to Mr. Michael Schaub of Bookslut.com. And Greg Nibbler and Sarah Dillon will join us today to celebrate Fun Employment Radio's 200th anniversary. If you are not currently listening to the Rick Emerson radio program, you want to be listening up for a little thing called the Emerson Grant. What is that, Uncle Rick, you ask? Well, I'm here to tell you. The Emerson Grant is a thing that may make it possible for you. Yes, you. May not actually be you. Possible to listen to the Rick Emerson program for 1 month at absolutely no cost. Of course, you know, it costs the low price of 32 cents a day for most folks. But I'm telling you about a way that you might, in fact, skip even that 32-cent-a-day obligation. What you do is you leave us a voicemail at 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, explaining why you or somebody you know needs a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson program to be given to them at no cost. We're going to give away 10 of those every month. So you or somebody you know to be listening to the Rick Emerson radio program 1 month for free.
And I did suggest that I would be willing to look at some haikus that people sent to don@rickemerson.com. And someone did indeed send a poem, which they said was a haiku, but it was actually a limerick. And it was really about your cell phone. It wasn't about why they should get a grant. So I think the whole offer was kind of misconstrued by listeners.
I will say that I wholeheartedly endorse the limerick approach because I view the limerick to be more of the people's poem. It's not one of your liberal East Coast elitist poem structures. Look, I ain't no iambic pentameter kind of guy, but I know a few things. So the Emerson Grant is brought to you in partnership with our good friends at New Millennium Maintenance. Find out more about it at rickemerson.com. This is Don Taylor doing some speechifying about the newsification here at the news desk.
Well, the Westboro Baptist Church, the small Topeka, Kansas nut bar church that pickets funerals of American soldiers to spread the message that God is punishing the country for being tolerant of homosexuals, has thrown in that since the Dove World Outreach Center has called off their Quran burning, they'll be more than happy to jump in and burn a Quran.
Who made this prediction yesterday?
You did.
That's right.
You did indeed. The Canadian Press reported Thursday that in an interview with a Canadian radio station, Terry Jones, the leader of the tiny Dove World Church.
He's the guy in Florida. He
which
was going
to
be
I have to say, I hear Dove World, and that just sounds delicious because it makes me think of like
like a Times Square outlet for Dove bars?
Yeah, like Hershey, Pennsylvania or something. Yes. That it's a place where you can go and just eat Dove bars all day. But anyway, Jones said he was calling off the thing. He said they had a lot of prayer about it, blah, 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 blah. And but he said he still plans to burn at least one copy of the Quran, you know, I guess just to keep his hand in. Political analyst David Gergen has strong words about Pastor Terry Jones and his church in Gainesville.
I think we've all been sucked in involuntarily into a freak show. This fellow's not just a lunatic, he's a jerk.
Well done, David Gergen.
Yeah.
I dig that guy. He is seriously one of my favorite news analysts and political commentators, like, of all time. That's awesome.
He says that the pastor's 15 minutes of fame may be over.
He's been playing around with American lives. He is a publicity hound, and he does live off the oxygen of media coverage.
All right. So there you go. I'm still unclear about it, the whole deal, because... So this is the guy in Florida who was saying he was going to burn a bunch of Qurans tomorrow. Quran, by the way, apparently being another one of those words like Gaddafi that we can never really figure out how to spell. There's like 900 different spellings for it. But he said he was going to burn a bunch of those. And then I guess he got a call. Drudge was saying that he got a call from the White House. And I don't care how big your stones are. That's got to be an unnerving. When you look and you go, well, 456... 1212. Anybody know what that is? You know, and then and then you realize it is in fact the Secret Service calling to have a little chat with you. So then he said he wasn't going to do it. He was canceling it. But then he said he wasn't canceling it. He realized that made him look like a pussy. So then he wasn't canceling it. Then he was just suspending it, which is when Fred Phelps and his crew sort of stepped up. And I did say yesterday I felt that this was the sort of Florida guy's bid to unseat.
Yes.
The Westboro Baptist Church is sort of like the head of the crazy table. But Fred Phelps must have sensed the same thing. He must have felt like, well, no young whippersnapper is going to take me off the board. And so he decided to just pick up the slack, which is sort of great because it means that then just the huge media chaos can continue. And I was afraid that I wouldn't have anything to do with this weekend. Like I was I was just so fearful that it was like I was going to go home, tonight. And I was just there was going to be nothing on television tomorrow. There was going to be, you know, the sort of the normal 9/11 tributes or whatever. But there wasn't going to be anything just flat out insane for me to watch.
But nope. Crazy Bowl.
Now,
it's time for Crazy Bowl.
But now to the rescue, I have more of this bizarre weirdness going on. Did Fred Phelps, did that guy? Are they doing that in Kansas? Or wherever they, because they're in Topeka, Kansas, right?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly.
Oh, I hope he's on a bus to Florida right now. I bet that they were just like, they were booking Greyhound tickets like 5 minutes after that guy said he wasn't going to do it.
Because not only will they do it, they will do it like on the front lawn of this guy's church.
I hope that they, in fact, I hope that Fred Phelps and his crew go and actually picket at this guy's parish or church or whatever it is. Because then it would just be like one of those, the weird, I forget the Greek name for this, but the snake eating its tail thing, where you just have the universe folding in on itself. And I can just be at home on the couch with some of that sour cream and onion Orville Redenbacher popcorn that they make, just enjoying the entire spectacle.
And maybe Terry Jones will just run out of the church at the guy in a fury, and then we'll just have like this crazy smackdown on the front lawn.
It's a fact. This is one of those things where we just have decided for some reason to be all irritated by this guy in Florida for reasons that are, I mean, there's just crazy people burning and tearing and shredding things like all the time. I mean, Gergen really does have a point. Yeah. You know, he's sort of like an insect that you can kill by, you know, looking away for 15 minutes.
No, it just is. Whether it was like by pure circumstance or if it was actually calculated genius, it was absolutely brilliant, a brilliant strategy, brilliant timing, and he managed to get this out to just the right media outlets, so it spread like wildfire.
Well, I lived in Salt Lake City when Nine Inch Nails was touring with Marilyn Manson, and Marilyn Manson had this whole thing he did in Salt Lake City where he just tore up the Book of Mormon on stage. You know, and that was after, I think because the deal was that he had come with Nine Inch Nails and that he had been tearing out pages from a Bible. And so Salt Lake preemptively said, when you come to the Delta Center, which is where the Utah Jazz play, it's a big arena there, they said Nine Inch Nails can play, but they said, like, you know, no Marilyn Manson, because we've seen this thing, how he tears up Bibles or whatever. He says, no, sir. And so they wouldn't let Manson play. So then he came back. And because the Delta Center had not let him perform, so he came back and he played at a club about 2 months later. And I think during the course of the evening, he must have just had a guy backstage whose sole job was to be like that guy that would follow Elvis around and be ready with a cigarette whenever, you know, the King would just say, I need a cigarette. And the guy would be ready. Here you go, King. There must have been some guy backstage. His sole job was just to be ready to hand him a Book of Mormon, because it was like every other song, Book of Mormon. And he would just start shredding it up on stage. I remember saying at the time, though, to somebody that Manson's whole thing of being, you know, Mr. Provocateur in terms of religion. I remember telling my friend Mark at the time that if Marilyn Manson really wanted to impress me, this is back in like 95, saying that if Manson really wanted to impress me, he would have torn up a Koran on stage, you know? We'll see how big your balls are now, friend. Here's a, you know, because the thing is, you just tear up Bibles all the time. Wait, they're going to stop you from playing. You'll have to come back. You'll have to come back and do your rock show at like a different arena. So it wasn't like that really carried a lot of like courage points with me or anything.
Well, our listener Jenny says in the text box that she just read the most hilarious comment on a blog regarding the Koran burning. Quote, why don't people just download the Koran to their Kindle and angrily delete it?
Fantastic.
Let's do our science news.
All right. Here's your science news for Friday right here at Legion of News.
Fox News reports that students from the Australian National University have succeeded in moving particles a meter and a half using only the power of light. Very tiny particles, but particles nonetheless. ANU researcher Andre Rhodes said the device shines a hollow laser beam around tiny glass particles. The laser heats the area around the particles, but the particles stay cool and start drifting. When they stray near the hot laser beam, they get nudged back into the center by the heated molecules bouncing around. More heat is introduced under and off to the sides of the particles and gently forces them up the hollow laser tube. They have therefore created essentially a tractor beam.
I'm unclear about this. So they...
Well, you remember the tractor beams?
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
like,
I know
Star
what
Trek
the tractor beam
like
is,
that?
but it's a laser that, like, runs in reverse.
Basically, it's...
But it sort of pulls you along with it?
It's a way of moving something just using light.
Okay.
Basically, yes.
That's messed up.
They using heat around and under these particles, they're able to actually lift and move the particles just by focusing the light.
See, this isn't one of the stories where it's like, I feel like they're kind of making it up somehow. Like, this is a guy who needs venture capital, and so he just sort of floated this story thinking that somebody will go, that's awesome, I want to underwrite the rest of that. And really, there is, you're going to go there and you're going to open up the laser and it's just going to be filled with rocks, you know?
The speed and the direction...
a potted plant inside.
The speed and direction the particles move in can be manipulated by changing the brightness of the beams. With the particles and the laser we use, I guess up to 10 meters in the air should not be a problem, Mr. Rhodes said. The max distance we had was 1.5 meters, which was limited by the size of the optical table in the lab. Unfortunately for science fiction fans, the technology won't work in space because it requires the use of heated gas, which can't exist in the vacuum of outer space. But Mr. Rhodes said there's plenty of possible uses for his tractor beam on Earth, such as moving dangerous substances and microbes, and for sample taking and biomedical research. In his new book, The Grand Design, University of Cambridge cosmologist Stephen Hawking argues that the universe was created as a result of the laws of science and that God was not a necessary part of the creation. Larry King asked Hawking, why has that stirred so much controversy?
I'm sorry, I got to turn this down because it's him, quote, speaking, so it's real low.
Science is increasingly answering questions that used to be the province of religion.
Yeah, okay.
King asked Hawking if he believes in God.
God may exist, but science can explain the universe without the need for a creator.
All right, that is, I think that is an excerpt. I think the entire episode airs tonight, so you'll be able to watch that. Because Larry King's got a finite number of shows left now, because they've announced that, not Piers Anthony. Who is it that's taking? It'd be hilarious if Piers Anthony.
Yeah,
Piers Anthony took over.
Yeah.
Yes. Talk to me about a skein in time. Who's the guy that's taking
Piers
over?
Piers something. The guy from Britain's Got Talent. Piers, I don't remember what his
name is. Yeah, see, this is the sort of thing I should know, but
I've got it here somewhere.
I forgot the guy's name. Whoever it is less interesting than Larry King. Like, yeah. I mean, that's just sort of a given. But the great thing is that it means that Larry King is probably going to be... whatever shackles may have kept him from getting loaded before every night's taping are almost certainly off at this point. So he's probably just going to stop by Elaine's and get a,
Piers Morgan.
I'm going to stop and get myself a belt before I come into the show. Anybody want anything? So I'm telling you right now, between today and the final program that Larry King does, you don't want to be missing a thing, because I'm predicting that every show that guy does from now until the end of his run, which is the end of this year? Is it next year?
Yeah, after he's going to be there through the summer, so I guess it's somewhere in the fall, probably.
Yeah, you can expect genius. It's going to be flat out awesome. You just mark my words on that right now.
A listener in the text box asks, how come whenever you read a story in plain English, in which all the parts of the story fit together and make perfect sense, Rick always comes back with, wait a minute, I'm confused about this?
Well, because my brain is tiny and underpowered, unlike the laser tractor beam thing that you were reading. Because let's be honest. You could put me in a room for 50 years and have a team of scientists in there speaking to me in one-syllable words, and I would never really understand how the thing works. But, I mean, just the idea that there's a laser that, in effect... this is one of those things that I almost have to have a visual aid for. Not that I'm expecting you to, like, create one for me now, but I'm just... I have to go back and discuss it.
You on the back of a napkin or something.
Yeah, it'll never really make any... Because here's what my brain is busy doing, while we're talking about lasers. Part of my brain is busy coming up with this. Wondering about some fire-retardant covering that we could put on your holy book to prevent it from being burned that we could then call Quran wrap.
So that's what you're doing over there with your notepad and your pens while I'm reading science stories, is you're writing down things about Quran wrap.
Quran wrap is what that would be called. That you wrap your... It's a Quran. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
A 5-minute brain scan can reveal the maturity of a child's brain, according to a new study. The results could be used to track abnormal brain development and catch brain disorders like autism early. The study, published online this week in the journal Science, uses a specialized method of mathematically sifting through magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, data to form a picture not just of the brain's structure, but the way its various regions work together. The beauty of this approach, study researcher Bradley Schlager said, is that it lets you ask what's different in the way that children with autism, for example, are off the normal development curve versus the way that children with attention deficit disorder are off of that curve. As the human brain matures, its organization changes. The tightest connections in young children's brains are between areas that are physically near one another. As the brain ages, these connections shift, and networks connecting distant regions become the strongest. To measure these shifts over time, Schlager and his colleagues used a method called resting state functional connectivity. As the participants rest in an MRI scanner, the researchers used the machine to measure increases and decreases in blood flow to various brain regions. Correlating the blood flow allows the researchers to learn which regions communicate and work together.
Well, it's like that brain scan they'll do, and then they show you a whole bunch of images on the screen, and then the sections of your brain light up,
yeah,
depending on what part of your brain is being activated, which is completely freaking bizarre, by the way. The other thing that'll happen sometimes is... Was it in the Bill Bryson book I'm reading? I don't think so. It was some book I read recently. They talked about a guy where literally like one whole, what do you call it, a hemisphere, one side of his brain, it was just damaged beyond repair, and he was in some very traumatic, horrifying car accident, and just smashed the side of his head or whatever. And it was all of these functions that they thought were completely limited to that side of the brain. But then within like 5 years, they just sort of ported it over to the other side. The brain was like, well, let me just get this stuff out of here. Let me move it over to the other side work. All right, yeah, you guys want to help me? And it's like the synapses just carried everything over there.
Yeah, that's one of the fascinating things about the brain is that, we do have different areas of the brain where different things happen. But if you suffer traumatic damage to the brain where one section doesn't work, if possible, in many cases, that those functions will just start happening somewhere else. And they don't know why, because they still don't know why the brain actually does the things it does.
Here's an even more fascinating story, and it's from the same book, and I remember it now. It is called The Hair of the Dog, and it's a book put out by the BBC because it is a spin-off, but it's basically a radio program they do that's all about science. They put it in book form, so it's called The Hair of the Dog and Other Something or Others. But it's just a compendium of its transcripts, basically, of all the episodes of this program the BBC has done. And they talked about this woman that they found in France, insert joke here, who was getting by with 10% of her brain. And when I say 10% of her brain, I don't mean that whole thing they said, about like when you were growing up that they always told you only use 10% of your brain. I mean, her brain was like 10% the size of yours because she had that, what is the thing where your head's full of water? Hydrocephalitis or whatever.
Yeah.
So she'd had that when she was a kid. And so the pressure on the inside of her brain was that she had all of this excess fluid. So her brain had effectively just become this flattened out strip up against the top of her skull.
Oh, wow.
So her brain was basically shaped like a sort of upside down horseshoe. But it was only
it was like the mushroom on top of the kombucha.
Exactly. But it was only like half an inch thick. So she had a brain where the volume of her brain or whatever, the actual finite size of it, was 10% of that of a normal person. But and again, insert joke, she works at the DMV. But there was no way in which she behaved differently than other people. Her cognitive functions didn't seem to be diminished. She didn't have trouble speaking. She didn't have any physical or motor defects. She didn't have any personality weirdness like that Phineas Gage guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they figured out that the reason why, this is why things are fascinating to me, is that it didn't happen all at once. The deal with your brain filling with fluid and then your as you're growing, or your skull filling with fluid and your brain flattening out as you're growing up, is that it happens so slowly over time that it's like your apartment filling with water. And if it happened over the course of like a year, you and your friends would have time to move everything to the roof. Hmm. And that's kind of what the brain did. It went, well, we're not going to have any room down there. We got to put everything up on top, I guess. And so all of the knowledge that would have been in the rest of her brain, it all went to the very top, which was then unharmed.
Wow.
It's just mind-blowing.
So did they have to, like, keep her skull full of liquid then so that her brain wouldn't be damaged? Because once they found out that it's all full of liquid, you can't, like, and it's holding the brain up, they couldn't, like, just drain it, could they?
That's an interesting question, actually. I'm unclear about whether or not her
skull, or
whether there's...
Just stuff it all full of cellophane or something?
Packing peanuts. But not the edible kind they make now.
No.
I mean, the styrofoam kind that are durable.
Right.
That's an interesting question, whether they, they left it, or whether her brain itself left some of the fluid in there, or whether there was some other sort of filling material. I mean, her brain must have had like a tasty nougat or something that it created to sort of keep everything in place.
Brain nougat.
Let's not say that anymore. Are we done with our science?
I believe so.
Fantastic.
Yes.
All right. There's science on the march. Say, Dawn Taylor.
Yes?
Speaking of how your brain works, Speaking of learning and things and your brain adapting over time.
Como?
Did you? Thank you.
KS?
Did you know that the younger set, Small Fry, that they learn younger than we older folk?
Well, yeah, they're younger, so they would naturally learn younger.
They learn younger. They speak prettier, earlier, younger day.
Them words, good. Small kids.
I'm sorry, I was distracted by distracted by a bright, shiny object on the screen of my computer. The point is, it's not like your brain becomes smaller as you age, Dawn. It's just that you use it less efficiently or in different ways sometimes.
You know, they say that you should do things to exercise your brain, like Sudoku puzzles and crosswords and perhaps learning a language.
Whenever they say that, I always wonder if the people who are saying that, in fact, just have sort of like a paper pulping plant somewhere that is cranking out crossword books that they sell next to the Globe magazine and Tic Tacs.
Well, what they say actually is that you should do things that involve learning and exercising your brain and working out problems that are different from the kinds of problems you have to work out through your everyday work day.
Because you want to create new folds in your brain, which is where the
exactly.
Keeps your brain young and spry.
Exactly.
And flexible and pliable. Like
exactly.
like a warm batch of challah dough.
Exactly.
Anyway, Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland that offers Spanish language classes for adults. And when I say for adults, there's a lot of places for kids to learn different languages. We read Spanish, or be it anything else, they're learning as a second or a third language. And most schools, public schools, private schools, anywhere in between, whether it's a home tutoring, anything like that, it is a lot easier to get kids acclimated and immersed in a language much earlier in their lives than, that used to be the case. And those classes are a lot more efficient. If you're an adult, it may already be too late for you to learn in that way, just because that is a thing that we have only recently started to institute in most of our schools. So if you're an adult, you want to learn with other adults just because your brains are all going to work in the same way and in the same fashion. And also at Castalia, classes are limited to 8 students, which means you're not going to be packed in there with like 50 other people where you're all kind of, trying to get individual attention, but it's not really working out because, the teacher's only got so many hours in the day and whatever. Classes are limited to 8 students means you're all going to be learning at around the same rate and the same method. It's a comfortable, relaxed environment, and the owner, Clara Grebel, is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina and a proud supporter of the Emerson News Network and of Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. You can find out more about Castalia Language Center by going to PortlandSpanish.com. That is PortlandSpanish.com. Find out more about Castalia Language Center by going there today. Won't you please? This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Rodrigo es el estudiante más inteligente de su clase.
I have no idea what you're saying.
Rodrigo is the most intelligent student in his class.
Okay, then.
You could say things like that if you learned to
speak
Spanish.
If only I spoke Spanish. Mm-hmm.
Convicted killer Cal Coburn Brown was executed early Friday by lethal injection for the rape, torture, and murder of a Seattle-area woman after delivering a statement forgiving the victim's family for hating him, but complaining he was treated unfairly by the legal system. Brown, 52, died at 12:56 a.m. this morning after a 4-member team injected a lethal 1-drug cocktail in the execution chamber of the Washington State Penitentiary. The father, brother, and 2 sisters of his victim, Holly Washa, witnessed the execution, as did King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg. Washa was a 22-year-old woman that was raped, tortured, and murdered in Seattle, Washington in May of 1991. Brown, who had been released from an Oregon prison on March 25th of that year, abducted Washa at knife point as she was leaving a hotel parking lot near the airport. He forced her to drive to the bank and take out money before accompanying him to his motel, where he spent the next 36 hours abusing her. Her lifeless body was found on May 27th, 1991, in the trunk of her car, having sustained knife wounds and signs of being strangled. Brown protested sentencing disparities, saying that criminals who had killed many more people than he did, such as the Green River killer, Gary Ridgway, were serving life sentences while he served a death sentence. "I only killed one victim," he said. "I cannot really see that there is true justice. Hopefully, sometime in the future, that gets straightened out." Brown did not apologize to the family of the victim, but said he understood their enmity for him. He said he forgave that hatred, held no enmity towards them, and hoped the execution would give them closure. He also said the prison staff had been the most professional and that he had no complaints about his treatment there for 17 years.
I have to say, I kind of like a guy that just sort of goes out, just sort of goes out defiantly like that. If you're a jackass in life, why try to blubber, like a child at the end and try to do some sort of, recantation at the end? If you're going to be a dick, be a dick all the way.
Yeah, and that is a pretty dickish thing to say. It's like, well, hey.
I forgive you.
That guy, that Green River guy, he got life in prison. Well, he's still alive. I'm getting the death sentence.
Well,
I only killed one person.
I was actually going to say that the thing about it is, though, I hate it when guys like that say something with which I am sort of forced to agree. Because he is really right. I mean, It doesn't make any sense at all, because what it effectively says is that, like, one normal person is worth like 36 dead hookers. I mean, that's really what it says. Look, if the Green River guy had killed 36 Girl Scouts, you can bet he wouldn't be serving life anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
But because they're whores, they're less important, you know, obviously.
Well,
that's what the legal system says. So the guy has a point.
That's what the legal system says, indeed.
But that's what I'm saying. So it's like I hate it when you get some guy like this who is obviously a contemptible cretin, but then he says something at the end where I have to go, well, okay, he's got a point.
He's kind of right.
Sure, raping and killing, wrong. But, I mean, he does. I like to think that if I was ever executed, though, that that I would come up with something memorable for my last meal or my last words or my last something or other. And I've never really thought about the last words, because it just seems like it's probably all been done. It seems like anything interesting you could come up with for your final statement, some guy has already probably beaten me too. You know what I mean? There was this guy, who was the guy that the Executioner song was about? Was it
Gilmore.
Gary Gilmore, and he sort of had... He had this sort of great, he had the kind of great Eastwood way of going out, because they used a firing squad on him, and they've only done that twice since then, but he was the first guy in a long time that they'd killed with a firing squad in Utah. And he had the deal where they strapped him into the chair, and they asked if he had any final words, and his final words were just, let's do it. Which is, I like to think you go out Sam Elliott style.
It was kind of interesting, because just as you said that about having an interesting last meal, you said that as I was typing into Google, trying to find out if I could find out what his last meal was, because it didn't say in the story I had. And his last meal was pizza, apple pie, and root beer.
Well, there's that guy that, I forget his name, but there was some guy some years back. His whole plan was to get too fat to fit in the electric chair in Florida. And so he was just eating like Cornish game hens every night or something, because I guess the deal was that he had something where he was on a special diet. It was like a religious thing or a health thing or whatever. But he somehow managed to finagle his way into eating just a bunch of fat every night. And his whole thing was, I'm going to get so fat they can't stick me in the chair. And then like up until like his final meal, which was like, I mean, it was like quarts of ice cream and whatever. And then the great sort of irony at the end was he fit perfectly. He wasn't too fat. He wasn't too small. He was just right. And he said, this is right in the electric chair. And they went, and I like to think they went, they just sort of asked him, like, hey, how'd that work out for you? Right before they switched it on.
An overnight fire that damaged an apartment building occupied by students at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, was sparked by flaming liquor shots. The students had gathered at the first floor apartment for a birthday celebration, and the shots, in which highly flammable alcohol is set on fire, were brought out during the party, according to Chief Tom Garrett of the Troy Fire Department. The students tried to extinguish the fire, but were unsuccessful, and waited several minutes before calling 911.
It's like fail blog for 1,000.
The students had consumed a substantial amount of alcohol,
really?
Chief Garrett said. One person was passed out in a bed and had to be dragged out by his friends.
Awesome.
The fire had started on the first floor, and residents in the second floor apartment and in the third floor attic had to be rescued. Three Troy police officers arrived on the scene at about 2:30 a.m. and were told there were people trapped inside. The officers entered the building and helped bring two students trapped on the third floor to safety. One officer was treated for smoke inhalation.
And what was the university? It was a polytechnic institute.
Yeah, it's RPI. It's a technical institute in New York.
Is it a place of note? You would imagine polytechnic isn't like a community college or anything. One normally associates this with idiot frat guys.
No, this is one of those places that trains like electrical engineers and people like that.
To be fair, most electrical engineers that I've known probably can't hold their liquor very well.
Yeah.
They're spindly folk. there is a great fail blog entry that shows some guy at like Theta Chi, whatever. And he and his friends are all doing flaming liquor, and then he just sets his pants on fire, and it's so deeply satisfying to watch. And then they do the awesome internet thing of playing it over and over and again in slower motion. So he's just, no! And then his crotch is ablaze. And I think one of his friends, I'm not entirely certain of this, I might be adding this little part as sort of a fillip in my head, but I believe one of his friends, understandably so, immediately tries to put out the blaze by just whacking the guy in the crotch with his hand.
Nice.
My pants are on fire. How could this get any worse? Let me put it out. Wham! And then just hits the guy right in the junk. I love the internet. I love things. Today's one of those days where I just love all things and all people and all happenings everywhere, even the horrible ones.
Wow.
Because they provide a little color for me. There's a little splash of enjoyment and zest to an otherwise drab and dull existence. That's what I'm saying, Don.
Speaking of splashing, if I splashed a little bit of something on a carpet, what would be a good idea for me to do, Rick Everson?
Let's say you were attending Polytechnic and you were doing flaming shots of something or other, and one of those things caused a little bit of, let's say, some smoke damage, or maybe when you brought out the fire extinguisher, you found that it left a substantial splotchy kind of a stain all over the place.
That would be horrible.
It would be horrible. What would be even more horrible is if you had not written down in advance a number that would then reach the appropriate parties to come and remove that stain from the carpet. And what if the smoke damage had become so substantial that one just had to have large sections of it cleaned, but then one significant other, or perhaps the dean, who already had you on probation, was going to be coming back.
Secret probation.
Yeah, and inspecting the joint, and then it's like he's going to come in and everything's just a muck. Well, you want to write down this number in advance and then keep it in a safe place, like in Papillon. It's 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. That is the number for the cleaning solution that is operated by a good friend of ours and a longtime listener named Michael Beatty. Michael Beatty is he lives here in Portland. It's a Portland business. It's a Portland business also in the sense that he gets his equipment and supplies and his cleaning accessories and chemicals from other companies here, and then he keeps his advertising dollars right in Portland as well. In fact, right here at Legion of News on PDX.fm. So whenever it is that your feet might touch, they always say, whether that's upholstery or stone or tile or carpeting or anything, whether there's damage caused by pets or whether it's odor or whether it's just Del Paxton would say, hell man, just time. You just got to clean it. You call him right now or you write it down and use it for an emergency. 971-533-3211 is his number. And please do tell him you heard about it here. That is Michael Beatty of Cleaning Solution. Don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today featuring an interview with Kenny Johnson, late of The Shield. There is a great moment, by the way, about 5 minutes into the interview, because we taped it just before this show. And I'm going to excerpt it, and I'm just going to put it on my phone as some sort of thing where you just go, Lamb! This is great. And he's now joined the Sons of Anarchy cast. And so once you were done with The Shield, or did that happen last night?
That happened last night.
Okay, so today we will talk about, here's what we'll do today, Rick Emerson Show. We'll interview Kenny Johnson. We'll talk about the fact that you finished, finally, The Shield last night. We will have Mr. Michael Schaub from Bookslut.com, which is a book review site. Large sections of it are headquartered here in Portland. We'll do that. Greg Nibbler and Sarah X. Dillon will join us in the studio to celebrate the 200th anniversary, 200th show, I guess, of Fun Employment Radio. And then we have watches coming up today.
We do. We have
Taser Watch, Hick Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. My God, I don't even know how we're going to fit it all in.
We're going to have to get started, like, right away. After all this right. show's over, we're going to have to just, like, hit the ground running.
Oh, and I got a great show opener. I'll put
And I had a really, really weird dream that I need to tell you about that involves you and The Shield and the show.
Okay.
The weirdest, like, work stress dream I've ever had.
Awesome. That's all coming up in the Rick Emerson Show at 1 o'clock. This is Don Taylor.
It's time for entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news from the Legion of News News Desk.
Kim McLaws' daughter is like a lot of other girls. She's a huge Justin Bieber fan. Her 13-year-old daughter excitedly told her mother Wednesday that she had received a text from Justin Bieber. McLaws wanted to know how. She was stunned to learn that her daughter had sent her cell phone number via private message on Facebook to someone purporting to be Justin Bieber. But McLaws knew there was no way that it actually was Justin Bieber. One of the reasons McLaws said she knew it was an imposter, because the fake Bieber only had 300 or so friends on Facebook. She was then horrified to learn the person had listed her daughter as a sibling and that other girls had posted their numbers on the imposter's wall so that anyone could see them. As parents, we try so hard to keep our kids safe on the web, McLaws said, but unfortunately the creeps know that Justin Bieber overrides the common sense of any 13-year-old girl. That's the scary thing. People knowing a little girl is going to want to believe that Justin Bieber just commented on her status.
How old is Justin Bieber?
He's 16, I think.
So he's not an adult legally, but I mean, he's not like 10. He's not some Aaron Carter.
No, but he's one of those Donny Osmond-ish looking, like very young looking pretty boys.
Now, of course, I'm not, I can never tell when you talk about Justin Bieber. It's one of those things where, like, if you're talking about something like, you know, Miley Cyrus or somebody, I don't even know how old she is. Is she 18 yet?
No. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's in her early 20s.
I don't ever track these things.
Yeah.
I was going to, you know, because with her, you have to give these, you know, disclaimers about, you know, well, I'm not saying she's engaged in anything, any sexual behavior, because she is, of course, a minor. Here's the thing about Justin Bieber.
And, of course, you have to actually gauge her in horse years. So, have you seen her teeth?
Does she have John Elway teeth?
Is she borrowing
George Thorogood's head?
Oh, dear God. She's like a cross between... Who's the pudding-faced NSYNC boy? Lance Bass. She's like a cross between George Thorogood and Lance Bass.
That really is unfortunate. She's mant. I don't even know what I was saying. I was just going to say that Justin Bieber, though, a guy like that, I would imagine he gets his share of adult groupies as well. I'll guarantee you.
He went vacationing with Kim Kardashian.
Oh, he's a deviant. You just know he is.
Yeah.
I mean, because it can't help... You are just like clinically insane when you're a teenager anyway. And, you know, and I'm not trying to equate one with the other, but, you know, obviously if they say the children who go through some sort of, let's say, traumatic or upheaving. Well, you know, but if they're kids who get it like abused in some way, or they're exposed to weird like sexual behavior when they're very young, like that'll warp you early on and you develop differently in your attitudes about sex. But I would imagine even at like 15 or 16, if you're just leaving the house and there's just like hot chicks throwing their underwear at you, I mean, that's going to snap your brain in half like a dry twig.
I mean,
there's like, I'm telling you, there's some sort of a sex rehab in that guy's future someday, because it just, how could there not be? I mean, you know, I'm just saying.
In Touch Weekly reports that actress Lindsay Lohan believes the best way to remain sober is to get pregnant. A source claims the 24-year-old hates being alone.
That's always how that works.
And believes being a mommy will put her on a healthier path. She needs to be around someone nearly 24 hours a day, says the source.
I want someone who's legally required to love me.
She thinks having a baby could straighten out her life.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, so I like to think that the next generation of talk show hosts now, they will have an amusing story to follow as well with the younger Lohan.
George Clooney has often been compared to Cary Grant. Clooney isn't completely buying the link, however, as he breaks down why he and the North by Northwest legend are completely different.
I'm sorry, I have to wait just 1 second for this to load. That's my fault. This is a total fail on my part. Okay, this is Clooney?
Clooney.
All right, I think I've got that. Or do I?
Well, if you don't, we can just move on.
Was this from yesterday, or was this...
Yes, this was from yesterday. It was in the same file as the Ramsey file. So
oh,
I think that
go.
Was yesterday.
Well, let's see if I've got it here. Hold on. Let me see if I've... hold on.
This is a recruiting bonanza for Al-Qaeda.
That's probably not George Clooney.
I don't think that's it.
Wait.
I think what we have to do is understand the differentiation.
No, this is Gordon Ramsay. No, I'm sorry. That is totally my failure there. I gave you that soundbite, okay. And I think that is actually, of all the soundbites yesterday, that's the one that I didn't save for some reason. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring a shame on my family name there. I got nothing.
Yeah, that's right. As we mentioned earlier, America's Got Talent judge Piers Morgan has been named Larry King's replacement. King's last show will air on CNN December 16th. I am thrilled to be joining CNN and very much looking forward to bringing my own style of interviewing to the world's biggest and best TV news organization.
See, and I'm embarrassed to admit that I don't really know much about that guy. I feel like I ought to if he's going to be replacing the great Larry King.
He seems far too smart and far too dignified to be on America's Got Talent. He seems so out of place sitting next to Hasselhoff.
I just wish with all my heart.
And Sharon Osbourne.
I can't even tell you how much I wish they'd given that gig to Richard Quest, though. Because Richard Quest is the only person who really has the weird, like, scraping, aggressive, loud, boorish, but somehow gets away with it charm. In his inflection and delivery that Larry King has. So, I've got to ask you, how often do you have relations? In bed of sex. Do you have any cocaine? I would give anything to see that guy hosting Larry King's show.
I was hoping it would be Bill Maher, since there were like these reports of King having lunches with Bill Maher right after he made the announcement. So
I find the idea of Bill Maher way better than the actual reality of Bill Maher.
Well, he seems like a completely vile and unpleasant person in real life, but I think he's very good at what
he
does.
I don't get the I get the opposite. I don't get the sense that he's vile and unpleasant. I don't think he's hiding anything. I don't think he puts a front up in any way.
My thing of him finding him violent and pleasant is purely based on me being a woman. and seeing his attitude towards women. No, he's got really unfortunate attitudes towards women.
And that he likes to have sex with them?
And that he's a jerk.
Is this like a theoretical statement, or is there like personal relevance to this? Is there an anecdote of some kind that I need to know?
Well, I'm trying to think. I can't really think of the specific anecdotes right now, but there.
Is this because he talks about effing Ann Coulter? Which is hot, by the way. I find that whole thing hot.
I think there's more to the. This is a longer conversation than we can have at the moment.
All right. Well, then we should do one more and bring the curtain down on this because we are over
time. Oh, we are over time. Well, we should just. Okay, then very quickly, just I will mention that Battlestar Galactica actress Katie Sackhoff has landed a recurring role on CSI. She's going to play a tough-minded cop named Detective Reed.
A tough-minded cop?
And her first episode will air in November. All so right, Katie Sackhoff on CSI.
All right. There's your entertainment news, which means we are bringing a curtain down on this episode of Legion of News, brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM. It originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show, featuring our interview with Sons of Anarchy and S.H.I.E.L.D. actor Kenny Johnson, begins next at rickemerson.com. Have a fantastic week, and we'll see you Monday. This has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.